You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you the best.
Halford and Bruff.
Okay, you know it's not Halford and Bruff by now. It's Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd here for Halford and Bruff. In the morning, the official automotive sponsor of Halford and Bruff is the Delari family of Acura dealers. Still getting the marbles out of my mouth this morning. Let's try that again. 3, 2, 1. The official automotive dealer of Halford and Bruff is the Delari family of Acura dealers.
Off to a good start.
Third time's the charm or what? The official automotive sponsor of Halford and Bruff is the Delari family of Acura dealers. Experience the Delari difference today.
Start the intro again.
We did it.
We did it.
The first segment is just 20 minutes of reads.
Halford and Bruff, in the first hour, is brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Build your company to win with Kubota from Avenue Machinery. I was just so thrown off by that clip. Like, no context. Just like, hey, here's some guy on the radio saying I rubbed up some balls a lot in my life. Like, what?
Well, it's important for people to know their information in the previous day of sports, right?
So, yeah, I rubbed up quite a few balls in my life.
Can I get some context, please?
It's better if you don't. Just, you know.
I like that it sounds like he's responding to an accusation. You know, like, yeah, I've done it. What of it? What do you want, huh?
It's Cameron Maben from the Mariners broadcast last night.
Right.
And just like 20 seconds of dead air right after.
Yeah,
right?
I trimmed it. There's 18 seconds. They counted it. 18 seconds of dead air. I feel like there was some laughing going on.
There must have been some snickering.
They're just like, we're not sure how to follow that up.
How do we collect ourselves in this moment?
Sure, it was a good learning experience.
Yep.
I'm surprised I just didn't
do that. That was the following statement?
I'm surprised I didn't just do the classic 2-2 pitch on the way.
Moving on.
Cameron Maben, somewhere stashed away in my old collection of baseball cards, I have a Cameron Maben rookie card.
Very highly touted.
He was a part of the Miguel Cabrera trade, I believe. One of the pieces going the other way.
Yeah, because he was drafted by Detroit, I do believe.
Yep.
Were you a big baseball card guy as a kid?
Not entirely.
I was big into hockey cards, but that was it. Yeah. That was my life from the ages of 6 to 12.
I worked at a card shop. So.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right. You did.
And we kind of ran into some cards every now and again. But my most prized baseball card was a Evan Longoria signed rookie jersey patch auto. I don't even know the lingo anymore.
I had a signed Sean Green rookie card.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I bought from a card shop in Toronto, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Maybe not yours, but a card shop in Toronto, yeah.
Sean Green.
He was a big Sean Green guy, and then he went to the Dodgers.
Yeah, when he had that 3-homer game, he was legendary.
4 homers, no?
Did he have the 4-homer game? It was Delgado who had the 4-homer game.
Balak shaking his head. Come on, Balak.
I don't remember a Green 4-homer game.
Yeah, you're right. Delgado had a 4-homer game.
Yeah, that game was electric against the Tampa Bay Devil Rays back then.
My most prized card, even though I've been told it's absolutely worthless, is that famous Pavel Bure card with him on the rollerblades sitting on the fence.
With the great, like, the ultimate 90 shorts.
Yeah, one of the all-time great hockey cards. Yeah. Apparently, it's not worth a thing, but it's amazing.
So,
yeah.
Sean Green did have a 4-home-run game. It was with the Dodgers. He had 19 total bases in the game.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
That's
Aaron Judge night right there.
Yeah, that's right.
That's an Aaron Judge night. Yes. It's Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd. We are Halford and Bruff in the morning. Let's get to what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
What happened? Well, a lot yesterday. The biggest sports story on the planet was Serena Williams. It was not to be a fairy tale finish for her first tournament since announcing she will be retiring at the end of the U.S. Open. Serena losing in straights to Belinda Bencic. An emotional farewell to the Canadian crowd. It was nice.
It was good, yeah. And obviously, as we expected, the crowd very much in Serena's corner.
Yep.
Wasn't to be. We knew it was a possibility, right?
Yep.
That, you know, that she would lose in that one. But because of the announcement, because of all the hype, got a chance to still have a farewell with the Toronto crowd, and it was a good moment.
Great gifts given by the Toronto crowd as well. A nice Raptors and Maple Leafs jersey. I'm sure she'll
love that.
Keep those as prized possessions.
Huge Maple Leafs fan, yes. Serena Williams.
Always has been.
She just loves John Tavares.
Yeah. Who doesn't? Right?
She really thinks they need more grit in the back, on the back end.
She can't believe that Rasmus Sandin isn't signed to a contract yet, you know?
That's your goaltending plan this year? Matt Murray?
Yeah, Serena's very, very clearly not a Dubas fan.
Yes. So that was part of the story yesterday at the National Bank Open. And, you know, continued to just have some great farewells to Serena. You know, I think back to the Sedins. Like, what would it have been like if they didn't do the farewell tour? You know, if we didn't know that they were going to retire at the end of that 2017-18 season, you know, think of how many memories you would have been left without. Those are basically the best memories you've had inside Rogers Arena for the last almost decade.
10 years, yeah. Pretty much, almost.
Well, yeah, because the first round loss to the Calgary Flames, that wasn't very fun. Yep. First round loss to the LA Kings.
Yep.
So you haven't had a lot of good memories at Rogers Arena from a playoff perspective since 2011. And the farewell tour, if you are a certain stature of athlete, I think it's a must. What would we do without the farewell tour at this stage?
Yeah, I mean, it's up to the athletes how they want to do it. But the example of the Sedins is a good one. It would have been very anticlimactic. If it had just been, you know, media day after the season and they said, yeah, you know what? We're going to hang them up.
Yeah.
Didn't want to tell you guys, but that was actually our last game. So goodbye. It would have felt wrong.
Yeah.
In some way. And again, look, it's the athlete's decision to make. But you do when you have followed athletes like that for so long, they've been kind of a part of your daily life. Right. And you've seen them develop and you've seen them reach those heights, you want a chance to give them that acknowledgement, give them that respect, give them that farewell that they deserve. And it does seem more and more common that we're getting that right, that athletes are giving people a little bit of notice before they decide to retire. And I think it makes sense because fans want that chance. They want to know, hey, this is my last opportunity to see it live. This is my chance to show my respect and my appreciation for what they've done.
This text, I'm just preparing everybody for just how ridiculous this text is. What happened was Serena got destroyed. She should have retired 2 years ago.
I don't know, man.
Like, okay. There are some athletes that go a little bit too long in their careers. Not going to do that with Serena Williams.
No.
Kind of a ridiculous take coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line. So it's going to continue over at the National Bank Open. It's going to continue with Serena. We'll see what happens. US Open. She's obviously not right now in the best state of her game. It's part of the reason she is hanging it up. She's not focused on her game as much as she used to be. But as far as CanCon goes at the National Bank Open, you heard in the opener that Leyla Annie Fernandez lost in straights, but the CanCon remaining, Felix Auger-Aliassime on the men's side in Montreal and Bianca Andreescu advancing to the third round in Toronto with a 3-set victory last night over Elise Cornet, a match that took 2.5 hours to play. Bianca is... for somebody who's not playing at 100%, she's really she's playing some grueling matches right now.
And that was a great match to watch as well. That was a ton of fun to watch.
Yeah, Bianca Andreescu is one of the most, when she's on, she's a ton of fun to watch.
And she's just extremely entertaining. And there's so much emotion in everything she does. And I think sometimes it rubs her opponent the wrong way, how much emotion there is. But when you're rooting for her, it's great. And she was on top of her game. And you're right. It is... It's always fascinating, too, to see how she appears to be kind of fighting through whatever physical constraints or physical situation she's dealing with. And it's impressive when she's able to do it. And last night was a great example of that.
The one thing about Bianca, I feel, you know, after, I remember even after she won the U.S. Open in 2019, part of the conversation was around her. It's like, yes, what an exciting young talent. Can she stay on the court? You know, like even then it was a discussion. And since then, she's obviously had her battles staying on the court and avoiding injury. It just, this is kind of the thing with her. You hope she just gets right enough for a period of time that she can string some tournaments together and win some more slams, right? Because the talent is always going to be there. She has the power in her game, and when she's playing well, like last night, she can come to the net, make some great shots there, some winners there. It's just about staying on the court with her.
Yeah.
Because the talent, the power in her game, everything is in it. And when it comes to Felix, I don't know. Like, he's been one of the better players now for a while. He's the sixth seed in this Montreal tournament. It feels like Chapo is still the star on the men's side sometimes, and maybe it's because we remember the Rafa defeat from a few years ago, but Felix is the player that's likely to be more accomplished.
Well, in terms of results recently, there's really no comparison. It's Felix over Chapo, right? And Chapo is kind of into that, I'm not going to get invested until we see some results strung together at this point, right? Like, still root for him, that's great, but I'm not going to get ahead of myself again until we actually see it happen on the court. Whereas with Felix, you can still watch him and have that level of confidence. You know, as you said, sixth seed in this tournament, I believe he's ninth ranked in the world right now. So he is, you know, legitimate top-end player on tour. Do you want to see more wins? Do you want to see him go deep in a major and all that? Yeah, absolutely, but the results have been there much more consistently for Felix than Chapo.
It's going to be fascinating to see how Felix handles the rest of this tournament. We'd love to see a Canadian take home the National Bank Open, whether in Montreal or in Toronto. So last night, the Canadian team over at the World Juniors kicked off their tournament, a 5-2 victory over Latvia. Ridley Gregg had the outstanding goal of the night, a one-handed deke on the partial breakaway that really took away the evening as the highlight. But Connor Bedard remains the main story. He was the shining star coming into the tournament. He's the projected number one overall pick. He's the next coming, and is continuing to look the part. I was looking up the stats this morning, and it says he's got 7 points. Canada only scored 5 goals last night. I'm not sure how that's possible, but Connor Bedard's a part of it, so I guess it is.
There you go. He's just that good.
Yeah.
He's just that good, Reach. Capable of doing things we never imagined. But he showed off the shot, right, which we've heard so much about. We talked to Drancer about it on Tuesday, you know, how he's kind of imitated consciously that Austin Matthews drag shot. And that was how he scored. And it looked great. It looked dangerous. It looked like everything it was advertised to be. I also got to give a shout out. I mean, first of all, to Latvia as a whole, right? Like, final score, 5-2. There's been some times where Canada has played Latvia early in this tournament, and it's been like 14-0 or something like that, right? So shout out to Latvia for keeping it close and really make Canada work. And also shout out to one of the Latvian goal scorers, Bogdan's Hot Ass. Fantastic name.
Say that again. Sorry. What was
Bogdan's
that?
Hot Ass.
That's a real name?
One more time. I need to.
Bogdan's Hot Ass.
Get out of here.
Bogdans is the first name. Hodass is the last name.
That's not me chuckling
sure
like a 5-year-old.
Hodass or something?
I mean, maybe. It's not quite as fun to say, though.
Excuse me, Mr. Hotass. Yes, you called.
So anyway, shout out to him.
Mr. Hotass is my father.
You are all children. Get yourselves together.
I got to figure out the pronunciation of that last name.
Great goal by Bogdan's Hotass.
Fantastic. Sensational goal.
I'm sorry. So... That's one of the things, though. Like, you could spin that the other way and be like, well, Canada's not that impressive.
Well, not
if they're not beating Latvia by more than 3 goals.
That's fair. Yeah. Now, look, sometimes that happens, and especially everything about this tournament is weird, right? Yeah. Everything about this tournament is weird.
The
so
fact that there's like seven people in the crowd for most yeah, of these games.
Exactly.
Even
that's pretty
Canada
weird.
Game, like, I've never seen a Canada game so like so little attended.
No. I saw for one of the later games, I think it was Germany-Austria, one of the
one
reporters.
After the Canada
yeah,
game.
One of the reporters there just like physically counted. He's like, attendance tonight, 12. Because he just looked around the building. He was like, yeah, there's 12 people here.
If you can just look around and count yourself and not
a good
have to wait for the in-stadium announcement.
Well, it's a little surprising, too, that the one after
yeah.
the Canada game would have so few people there.
Because you're not even selling tickets for that game. You're just like,
yeah.
if you're in for the Canada
just
game.
Just stick around. Like, yeah. Stick around, have a beer, watch yep. another game. It's like, nah, I'd rather not. I'd rather not.
I'd rather just like go enjoy the night, I guess. Yeah. Maybe I got to be up early in the morning. I don't know.
I think I've been to movie double features that had more people stay
yeah.
for the
yes,
second one than that.
Absolutely. But
12.
Yeah, 12. Seriously, though, that's a good point, though. If you went to a movie theater and there's only 12 people, it would feel super empty. You're like, wow, not many people here. This is a 20,000 seat building and there's yeah. only 12 people there.
That's amazing.
Anyways, I'm not worried about Canada yet because it's a weird tournament.
So Canada will be playing Slovakia today. 3 o'clock is the puck drop for that one. Ridley Gregg scores that goal. He took a couple of penalties in the third period that were not so great. He's 20 years old, so he's one of those overagers that's been allowed to play in the tournament because technically this is last year's tournament being played in August after it was postponed. So I get all that. Great goal. He is one of the players that is highly touted that hasn't yet really made the NHL for the Ottawa Senators. And I started to think, like, the Ottawa Senators, if you were to just, like, hey, grab 32 people and you each get to select a team to take over as general manager, is Ottawa one of the first picks in that draft?
I don't know about one of the first.
Really?
Well, look, I get where you all get excited about young players and prospects and all that, but I mean, in this theoretical universe, isn't there something to be said for taking a team that can be competitive right away too, right? You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Fair.
So I'd still be drawn to Tampa and Florida and, you know, Colorado, obviously, yeah. right? If we're just talking about, you
would
know,
Ottawa be a top 10 pick?
It might be on the borderline top 10. But if we're talking about teams that kind of profile as really set up for the future, you know, I would look at like L.A. over Ottawa probably, right? And L.A. already made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Going to be competitive again this year. Plus, they have a really impressive depth of prospects. So I think Ottawa is kind of in that mix.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's I don't think they have such an overwhelming kind of bounty of picks and prospects and young players coming that they're the clear choice over some other teams.
That is one of the interesting things about Ottawa. So they've had a great offseason. They add to Brinkat. They obviously are pushing forward. You know, Pierre Dorion famously saying last year, the rebuild is over. And yes, they've got a very young roster. And not that their prospect system is bare. It's just not all that deep anymore. You know, they do have Ridley Gregg. They've got a couple of defensemen in Bernard Docker and Lassie Thompson that have been drafted recently that are still interesting but are getting into their early 20s, so you wonder when they're going to graduate and what that means for them as former first-round picks. Of course, they've got Jake Sanderson that they're really excited about and should be. He's one of the best players to yet play in the NHL, but he is going to be there this year. I would say Ottawa is in a really interesting spot, but I do wonder about their depth of prospects not being all that great given that they've been so bad for a long time.
Well, and a lot of that is that they've graduated guys, you know, yeah. guys have gone kind of straight to the NHL or really early to the NHL in their career, you know, like Stützle, now Sanderson. So that happens, right? And we've seen that with the Canucks, where you graduate a bunch of players really quickly, and then your prospect depth isn't all that great. Ottawa now, they're going into the hard part of the process. It's a lot easier to collect those assets, you know, collect cap space, not try to be competitive, bring in young players. That's the easy part. The hard part then is to translate all of that into a consistently winning team. And, hey, they had a really interesting offseason, right? Adding DeBrincat, adding Claude Giroux. That's nice. That's really nice. It's a good start to that process, but that's not all it's going to take for them to actually, again, not just take a step forward this year, but to actually become a competitive Stanley Cup team. They've still got a long road between where they are now and where they want to get to, presumably. And as you said, it's not as if they can just sit back and cool their heels and wait for this next wave of players to come and get them over the hump.
Yeah, I think New Jersey would be a team.
Yep.
That I'd take over Ottawa as well, as far as like, hey, rebuilding teams that are going to be pretty good soon, mm-hmm. or should be pretty good soon, in theory. If you're going to look at Arizona, I mean, you're basically just starting with a clean slate.
Arizona is just, I don't know. It would be really tough to peg where Arizona should be in that list, because, as you said, clean slate, but that also means you have almost nothing to work with in terms of actual NHL talent. You have Jacob Chychrun. That's about it.
Yeah.
Clayton Keller.
Chychrun and Keller. That's all you got.
Yeah.
Beyond that, nothing really for the future outside of, like, you know, prospects you've recently drafted. It's Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd. So, Canada and Slovakia coming up a little bit later on today, 3:00. That'll be all the Bogdan's hot ass discussion for the rest.
You never
of the
know. Let's see. Let's see what comes up.
You never know. Now, okay. So Jamie and I had way too much fun with this prior to the show beginning, and I want to warn the podcast listeners that you may not be able to hear this because of copyright reasons. But one of the funniest things to happen last night, and maybe one of the funniest things to ever happen in a Major League Baseball game.
All right, wow.
The New York Mets were having women's night.
Yes, I believe that's right. Women's night
at Citi Field. Their players were honoring female artists with their walk-up songs, and Daniel Vogelbach came out to Milkshake.
The designated hitter, Daniel Vogelbach.
Funnier when you see him walking up to the plate.
Yeah. I hope everyone can picture Daniel Vogelbach in their mind's eye, so to understand really where the comedy comes from here.
6 foot 270, I believe.
Yes, he's a rotund gentleman. He's got some weight to him.
Daniel Vogelbach, anytime he's like scoring on a single from second.
Oh, man.
It's basically like a fat guy touchdown in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's like, look at this hunk of man meat coming around third.
And he leans into it, too. Like, obviously, with the milkshake thing, he's
he embraces
it.
Yeah. He's having a monster year, too. He's on fire right now for the Mets.
Can we just clip the very end of that to hear the Mets broadcast and what they think about Daniel Vogelbach coming out to Milkshake? Greg?
Interesting choice. Milkshake? I have no clue. No, that's probably a good thing, Keith.
Probably a good thing, Keith.
There was
You know what? It's funnier because it's Keith Hernandez.
Yes,
you know?
It is.
You know, Keith, it is my ringtone.
Should we play his other clip from the game? I think we should.
Do it.
Let's do it.
He came back from break from commercial, and this is what the fans heard.
Who sings this song?
Shania Twain.
I like this song.
Ian Jabeau in for the second time in this series.
Were we just on?
Yeah, that was all on the air.
Oh, I thought we were off the air.
Well, it's, you know, I consider that a victory, Keith, because there's nothing that you said that causes any problem.
Keith Hernandez, he's had quite the week.
Yeah.
He's not doing Phillies games anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And he had to shut down his Twitter account because he received so much blowback from Phillies fans. His reason for not doing Phillies games was they are not defensively good enough for him to
So he's boycotting Phillies games?
He's just not doing Phillies games anymore. And he had to lock his Twitter account because he got so much interesting comments from Phillies fans.
I've never heard of an announcer refusing to call a team's games because they don't live up to his standards.
Well, Hernandez is known for
his
great. Dog,
I was going to say, great first defensive first baseman. That's so incredible.
He's so disgusted by the Phillies defense, he will not broadcast their games. I'm serious.
That is incredible.
As far as fundamentally and defensively, the Phillies have always been just not up for it.
Is that an actual quote?
Yeah. Oh, man. This is, wow, Keith Hernandez, man.
Legend.
Absolute legend.
I can never disassociate him from Seinfeld.
Nope.
Like forever,
no, for
he'll
sure.
forever be linked to that show to me. Just forever.
And Just for Men ads, too, right? The the hair dye.
Stash is trash.
Yeah.
Stash is trash.
Him and Clyde Frazier?
It's like, yeah, it's like Troy Polamalu in Head and Shoulders,
yes,
you know?
Exactly. It's his legacy now.
Keith Hernandez, the boyfriend, as we know him from Seinfeld as well. Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd. Halford and Brough in the morning. Coming up, Adam Kimmelman, his take on the World Juniors to this point and what to expect moving forward. That's next on Sportsnet 650.
Shout out to one of the Latvian goal scorers, Bogdan's Hot Ass. Fantastic name.
Say that again, sorry? What was
Bogdan's
that?
Hot Ass.
This is the best of Halford and Brough. Download the full show through Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you the best.
Halford and Brough.
Yeah, it's Halford and Brough in the morning. Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd with you for the rest of the week. Brough is back next week. Jamie will be sticking with you.
That's right.
That'll be exciting.
Will it ever? Yeah.
yes, more wake-up calls at 4 a.m.
Uh-huh.
This is going to be great. Really, really
extremely
looking forward to it.
Extremely exciting. I've never worked with Brough, though. So, yeah, it's always good to work with somebody else at the station.
Halford and Brough in the morning. Official automotive sponsor of the show is the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today.
Jamie, Andy and I are working on a Working with Brough handbook.
All right, please,
so,
yeah.
We'll pass that along to
Thank
you when
you.
It's completed.
I look forward to that.
He doesn't like it when you make direct eye contact with him, just to warn you.
Is this why you bring in, like, random croissants to potentially give to the host, Greg?
Yeah.
You know, in case Brough gets hungry?
Oh, where is my pocket croissant?
Gotta be prepared.
Next week you gotta bring two. Yeah. I might need one and Brough might need one, all right? So you got to be extra prepared, doubly prepared,
okay.
Balak.
Okay.
For those listening to the podcast, this was a story on Monday's show. Jamie didn't bring food and Greg just had a random croissant to give him. Because that's what we all do. We just carry croissants in case our friends
Stop!
Get hungry.
I could have dropped my croissant.
Bill from Buffalo says, don't worry, Jamie, you will carry Brough. I'm kind of hoping he'll carry me. That's less work for me then. And he's like the regular host, so I just want to slide in, do the bare minimum, get through the week. That's what I'm all about.
He's got fresh legs. He's coming off holiday.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, this one texter, very thrilled with how the show has been going this week. Listened to your show on the podcast yesterday. Laughing at the picture for breaking his wrist because it happened while cycling. Unprofessional and immature take. Looking forward to Halford and Brough coming back. You guys don't deserve this show.
My favorite part about that text is if there's two things everyone associates with Halford and Brough, it's professionalism and maturity.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%.
It's Chris Sale who broke his wrist. The Red Sox management group said, he was riding his bike to get lunch and hit a rock or something and caused a nasty spill. It's unfortunate, but I'm sure, you know, he'll be fine with the $145 million contract that he's got.
And to be fair, I wasn't laughing that he got injured exactly. I was more laughing at the Red Sox for handing out a giant contract and then getting like 50 innings in 3 years out of it.
And I think we clarified at the time. It was more the scenario that we were laughing at.
Yeah.
Not the specific injury.
All right. But thanks for the text. Thanks for the download on the podcast. Keep it coming. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Alfred and Bruff in the Morning with Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd for a couple of more days, if you can bear it, I will say. So,
I'm getting lots of Bruff advice now. Adam, the former bath guy, says, Jamie, approach Jason with caution. He can be a bit skittish.
Does he take compliments well? Is it one of those
no.
things? No.
No,
he doesn't.
He does not. Mm.
So don't compliment him. So just I'm guessing also don't insult him.
be like the elbow room, like one of those restaurants where the waiters just like constantly insult you and give you terrible service. Is that the way to deal with Bruff?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's how
All
he
right.
deals with me, so I just give it back.
All right, great.
That's how I've always produced his show.
It yeah. sounds like a great working environment
yeah,
you guys
it's,
have.
It's one at 5 in the morning.
I'm really getting excited for it next week.
Actually, Jason, that is a terrible take.
Keep that line in your back pocket.
Just pull the was it the Billy Madison?
Oh yeah.
That has to be the absolute dumbest thing I have ever heard. We are now dumber for having listened to you speak over the last 5 minutes.
Minor Matt Navichard says, don't yawn in front of Bruff while he's speaking to you, or he'll threaten to jam a vitamin C bottle down your throat.
Yep.
That could be a problem, because if anyone...
I love how Laddie's
just
that,
like, oh,
yep,
yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, that'll happen.
Well, I'm in his prime viewing area for people yawning, because he's looking directly at me. So every time I yawn, I get a threat of
what's the issue?
He just doesn't. It makes him yawn. So he's like,
oh, well, that could be a problem. Is anyone who's watching on the Twitter stream? I've been doing my fair share of yawning this week,
so that
might be an issue. That might be a flashpoint.
It is scientifically proven that yawning is contagious.
Yes, that's true.
I don't know if it's scientifically proven, but
he doesn't like it. That's,
it sounds
that's
right.
What it comes down to.
Just constantly ask him how he shot. That's right, Table Saw James. He'll be in a good mood if he shot well. He'll be in a bad mood if he shot poorly. Yesterday, I fooled a bunch of people on the course.
You hustled them?
I was like 4 over through 9.
Nice.
They were like, wow, you're like really good at this game. I was like, I don't know what's happening.
I assure you I'm not.
Proceeded to have 2 doubles and a quad on the back. It looked great.
Let's go.
That's more like it.
See, what you want to do is open like that,
yeah.
right? And then lower expectations dramatically. And then, you know, you go like 3 over on the back nine.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, wow, hey, that guy really turned it around. That was good. You want to leave on a positive impression.
Yeah. They're like, so are you like consciously doing that? Like, what? What do you mean? Like fading the ball? Like, no. Man, I don't think about it that deeply. Dan in Fort St. John. Guys, I feel like Halbro would have spent at least one segment talking about the Mickey Mantle story that surfaced yesterday. Come on! Is that the letter that the Yankees asked him to write? I saw it. I didn't spend too much time on it.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about. Balak, do you know about this?
I think just looked it up and I had not seen this.
I think about Mickey Mantle and I think Kramer punching him at the fantasy camp.
Yeah. There's 2 Seinfeld references today. Keith Hernandez.
I'm trying to fit in with the show, guys. Isn't it? Oh, there are more Simpsons.
Simpsons, yeah.
And Seinfeld.
We still take Seinfeld.
Okay. My bad.
We don't have 1,000 drops ready for Seinfeld.
Okay. So we don't have like a bunch of Ned Flanders, Heidely Ho neighborinos in the background just waiting?
I'm not going to lie. When he said Boggins' hot ass, the first thing I thought was nothing at all. Nothing at all. Nothing at all.
Stupid sexy hot ass.
Why are his pants so much tighter than everyone else's? Why does he have a special uniform? How is this legal? Is this standard issue?
Yes. Bogdan's hot ass scored for Latvia against Canada yesterday.
HODASS for those that are just joining us.
Yes.
Exactly.
HODAS? Would it be HODAS?
I don't know.
We'll never know.
It's giving Ivan a run for his money for the best name of the tournament.
Ivan.
Did we confirm that? Or
I'm just going to go. Well, the internet says that's what it is, so okay. It has to be true.
That's your story, and you're sticking to it.
Yep.
Okay. So, The Athletic is running its yearly annual confidence rankings of the front offices, the general managers in the National Hockey League. And I kind of wanted to start polling Canucks fans on how they feel through, what is it, 6 months of Patrick Alvin now? Less than that?
A little bit. Well, it's hard. January,
yeah,
I believe.
So 7 months.
Yeah.
7 months of Patrick Alvin, a little bit more of Jim Rutherford put in place as the president. We've got some major deadlines that have been hit. The major dates on the calendar of an NHL year have come and gone. So we do have a little bit of a track record now of this new front office. It felt like confidence was at an absolute sky high when the new FO came in, mm-hmm. because it could not have been lower than where it was with the previous regime, if we're all being honest about it. And so it almost felt like an unattainable bar for them to continue reaching. But some of the criticism has taken, well, it's gone too far for what's realistic about what's happened over the last 7-8 months with this team. Where is your confidence level at in the new Canucks FO? If we were to rank it 10 most confidence, 1 least confidence, where would your confidence ranking be at with this Canucks front office?
It's interesting because you almost want to do the cop-out, like, incomplete thing, because it feels so hard to really judge their vision for the team and evaluate what they've done until there's a resolution on the big story hanging over everyone's heads, the JT Miller thing. But as I said, that would be a cop out. So I would probably go like a 7, 6 or a 7 right now, right? Because yeah. I do think they have said a lot of the right things. And it's important to remember that we're still really early in the tenure in a lot of ways. Yeah, I know there's been a trade deadline and there's been a draft and there weren't the fireworks that people were expecting. There's been free agency. I like a lot of what they did in free agency. So I would put it in that 6 or 7 range, where it's probably come down from the peak because there's still the JT Miller situation. You know, they weren't able to clear significant cap space. Some of those things that they talked about wanting to do, like clearing cap space, like adding draft picks, they weren't able to do. It's fair to, you know, have those in marks on the, okay, negative column when you're evaluating this front office. But overall, just in terms of confidence, I think it still has to be fairly high in that range.
Seven's a very fair assessment. I think if you were to ask after the Travis Hamonic trade, it would have been a 10, you know?
Yes.
Probably, yeah. 11 after the Travis Hamonic trade. But as I said, it's hard to be too harsh, but it's also hard to be overly optimistic with what they've done to this point. Yes, you know, they add Andre Kuzmenko. That was a huge win for this organization.
It's true.
In an organization where you haven't been able to lure players to your city unless you're giving them the extra year of term, going a little bit more on the average annual value, that's the only way Jim Benning was able to truly lure players to Vancouver, lure free agents to Vancouver. Trades are one thing. Free agents were very difficult for previous regimes and are generally very difficult in the NHL, especially in a Canadian market. But in a league where 32 teams had the opportunity to sign Andre Kuzmenko, a 26-year-old scoring Russian player coming to the league for the first time on a 1-year deal, all with the same exact terms, mm-hmm. the Canucks were able to lure that player. That's a huge win for the organization. It really does speak to their ability to sell this organization on players and what the future is. They got Mikheyev. Something gets a little bit too much. I think that contract can look just about right if Mikheyev turns out to be the player that I think he is with this team. Most of my criticisms have come in the work they haven't done. And that may very well all still happen yet, Jamie. So I think I'm still at an 8 with this front office, because it's an incomplete picture, but some of the stuff they have done to add to this roster, I've liked.
Yeah.
So I can't really knock them too
hard. It's a good distinction to make. The moves they've made, overall, I feel very positive about them. It's the expectation that there would have been more moves to happen, right? And maybe that's unfair. And realistically, maybe there wasn't a way for them to execute a lot of those, right? Because we've seen how difficult it is to really significantly clear salary cap space across the NHL, right? It's not just the Canucks that are struggling with that. You could look at the defenseman market. Were there really that many interesting, appealing players either on the UFA market or on the trade market? So I understand the frustration that they haven't been able to remake the roster as much as maybe they indicated they'd like to at the beginning, as much as people thought they would. But I also understand that there are kind of constraints outside of their control affecting that. That's why maybe I've turned it down a little bit, but still in that kind of 6-7 range, right? You're not completely holding that against them in the evaluation here.
A couple of the humanoids texting in with their responses. Bill from Buffalo is at a 4. I feel like Buffalo is bringing Bill down, you know?
Everything seems like a 4 when you're in Buffalo.
My, you know, it's possible.
This one came in early. If my confidence in Benning was 1 out of 10, my confidence in Rutherford and Alvin is about 3 or 4 out of 10. It started higher, but Alvin appears to talk a lot and do very little. Now, the one thing I'll say about that is Alvin plays it pretty close to the vest. I wouldn't necessarily say that Patrick Alvin is out there, you know, making a lot of promises. Yeah, there's been certain things that they've said that haven't come to fruition, but talks a lot is not necessarily how I would characterize Patrick Alvin as general manager.
If talks a lot is just like saying a bunch of nothing, then Patrick Alvin is great at that. Because when we have him on for interviews, he is an expert at saying
very little. Very little.
And speaking in cliches to get out of making any sort of statement that he would rather not make.
Talking lots, but saying little.
Yes.
Is what you're going
on. Now, Rutherford is quite talkative, so I'll give the texter that. But Alvin, I'm not sure about. On the other side of things, Kevin says, I feel great about the job Alvin and Rutherford are doing. Kuzmenko, Dakota Joshua, Curtis Lazar. I'm at a 9. That's from Kevin.
Shouts to Kevin remembering Dakota Joshua.
Dakota Joshua. Let's go. Got to bump that grade up.
Going to be the fourth line star of the year.
He's an interesting player, an intriguing player.
It's kind of the player you need to find. Lazar is going to be interesting. I think people are really going to like Lazar as a fourth line player. You know, it's kind of the player that they needed, the right shot center, fourth liner type. That's only making $1 million. It's not Jay Beagle making 3 sheets over 4 years. It's a much more palatable salary. And even if Lazar doesn't work out for whatever reason, you can bury the entire contract in the AHL and nobody has to worry about it other than the owner paying the check. So not a bad idea there. This one coming in at the Dunbar Lumber text line. My God, guys, don't turn the market yet. Give them to me at an 8 out of 10. That's Dan from Van. Okay.
I don't think anyone was trying to turn the market.
This isn't Drance talking here. I'm sorry.
I think 6 or 7 is pretty reasonable. I don't think that's a hot take.
So
slamming the front office?
Nobody's slamming the front office here. But, yeah, there is some things that they have yet to do. Have they handled the JT Miller situation well? That's ultimately the biggest point of potential criticism with this front office. They could have traded him at the deadline. They didn't do it. They could have traded him at the draft. They didn't do it. Now you're stuck with him, and it potentially looms as a major storyline heading all the way into the trade deadline of next year.
That's what makes it so hard for me to rank personally, because it is so key what happens with that player. I don't know if I could give a grade to the front office yet until I see what happens with Miller.
Yeah.
Because if they lose him for nothing, that's a debacle. If they trade him for way less than market value, which may end up happening, that's tough as well. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, they've done some good things that I've liked. Don't get me wrong. I've had some. They've made some moves I've been impressed with, but it's still really hard for me to rank at this point.
There's going to be, if they lose him for nothing,
and that could happen,
unless, you know, the Canucks winning the Stanley Cup is involved,
Yeah.
Which is a very, very unrealistic possibility in the range of outcomes. It's going to be really ugly from a lot of different points.
It'll be a hard sell.
Not just, like, the front office has publicly stated on a few occasions that they will trade JT Miller if they don't have a contract in place at least a month out of the trade deadline. Patrick Alvin said it in the lead-up to last year's deadline. They're not in a position to lose players for free. Nothing they've done has suggested that they feel differently about the roster right now. It essentially, it's blatantly obvious that if they don't trade JT Miller at the deadline, it's probably because of ownership saying, hey, we want to keep this guy and we want to make a playoff run. And I don't even just think from the fan uproar. I wonder, you know, how that would affect the team internally, because Rutherford is a guy that wants to do things his way and wants his front office to be able to do things his way. And it's part of the reason he left Pittsburgh on his own accord. So I think that would be a fascinating storyline if it does play out on a lot of different levels.
And I think one of the reasons that confidence has been high and is still high for a lot of people in Jim Rutherford specifically is that he has the weight, you have to think, to...
He's the buffer between ownership
and
this organization.
And he has
needed.
The resume to carve out
yeah.
meaningful autonomy, right? In a way that has been difficult for other executives to do with the Canucks, right? And to your point, not being able to trade JT Miller when he's been pretty clear, pretty forthright about, yeah, no, if we don't have an extension of the deadline, we're going to trade him, right?
Yeah.
Like that, he hasn't tried to hide that fact. If that doesn't happen, yeah, it's going to raise some very fair questions about autonomy within that front office.
Alvin gets 8, Rutherford gets 10. He's built a great front office. Alvin will run it well in time. That's from Marcus in Gibson's.
Another one comes in here. And this is pretty close to how I feel. 7 months, still not enough time to properly assess how I feel about Alvin and co. So far, they've been promising it's a 7 for me. And your ally, Bilfred, great name, texts in something similar. He says, my confidence is around a 6.5 or 7 out of 10. Need more time to see where the direction of the team is headed. I think that's very fair that you should know. Yeah, okay, it's only been about 7 months. The resolution, one way or another, as you said, Andy, of the JT Miller thing is going to have such an enormous impact on where these rankings fall, right? Like if they're able to navigate it successfully from this point, I think you're going to see fan confidence very, very high across the board in the front office. If it goes south, yeah, people are going to be worried, and rightfully so.
We live day to day.
And we still get texts in the inbox like, why would you want to trade him? He's our best player. And it's like, well, because they can't afford to re-sign him. Like,
yeah.
They can't. His asking price is far too high for what the Canucks can offer. Unless he takes some incredible discount, which he's not going to do. Like, it's his right to ask for the money that he deserves.
Yeah. It's not just about what JT is going to make, though. You know, it's how much can you afford to pay JT and Bo Horvat?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's also up for a contract.
Like, of course he's their best player. I mean, we get that. That's not the issue. The issue is you can't. The Canucks can't afford him.
Part of the problem is, yeah, he might be your best player now. You're not projecting him to be your best player for the entirety of that contract.
Yeah, like, eight by six or something? Like,
realistically, Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford don't want JT Miller to be their best player next year. They want that to be Elias Pettersson.
Exactly.
The health of the franchise depends on Elias Pettersson being the best player, being the best forward on this team alongside Quinn Hughes. Best player alongside Quinn
Hughes. And again, it's age, right? If JT Miller is 25 and playing like this, it's a very, very different conversation, obviously. If he had 3 more years left on his deal, nobody's out there trying to trade JT Miller. It's his contract status, his age, what he's going to demand on his next deal. That's what makes it seem like a pretty logical move for the Canucks to explore.
How many players are entering their final year? Are you taking points off of those GMs? Every GM who has a player entering their final year of a contract is a bad GM. Give your heads a shake. That's a real liberal way of deciphering this conversation. But you have to think about the context of not trading him at last year's deadline and potentially knowing that at least Hedl, Lundqvist, and a first was on the table from the New York Rangers, knowing that deal was on the table and passing on it, leveraging that against what you may be eventually able to get in a JT Miller trade. You know, did you pass on better assets to keep him around for an extra 12 months and no playoff games? That's going to be ultimately the question that decides the JT Miller conversation, whether it was a win or a loss for this this front office.
And to the texter's point, yeah, look, obviously every team has players going into the final year of their deal. Not every team has their leading scorer over the last three seasons.
Yeah,
going into the season on an expiring contract, right? That's the unique situation with JT Miller.
It's Halford and Brough in the morning. Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd filling in for the week. Coming up, Whitecaps got a big match against the LA Galaxy this weekend. Manager of your Vancouver Whitecaps, Vanni Sartini, joins us next on Sportsnet 650.
This is the best of Halford and Brough. Download the full show through Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.